From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. 1-866-408-7669. What a week it has been. It's pretty much in this new Trump era. We have a blizzard of information, news, commentary, reflections. It's hard to keep up with, but it's fun. Teresa Payton's going to be with us today, former White House information officer for 06 to 08. We want to talk about what's happening now with cybersecurity, as well as what's happening with TikTok and everything else. We'll talk to her. And Benedict Frank is the vice chair and CEO of the Munich Security Conference, where everybody just was. He's going to give us an aftermath on that. So let's keep in mind, too, that we're going to speak to within this show, the president of the United States about everything, especially what's going on with Ukraine. Had a chance to do the whole interview. We're editing it right now, not taking anything out, but just putting it into sections within the show. So a lot going on today. In particular, we're talking about 40. We're talking about 47 first 30 days. We're talking about what's happening in Ukraine and Zelensky. I think foolishly flying off the handle, saying Trump is a victim of misinformation and not taking the mental deal. And we're talking about Hamas handing over four caskets, one of which was filled with somebody that is now not Israeli, and two children, one 9 months old, one 4 year old. With us right now is Benedict Frank, vice chair and CEO of the Munich Security Conference. Benedict, welcome.
Thanks so much, Brian. Great to be here.
What was accomplished in your conference?
I think, you know, we've accomplished a couple of things. We've certainly seen quite a conversation starter from the vice president, who used our stage to make a couple of points on free speech. But, you know, off stage, we've also seen a pretty constructive and very constructive U.S. delegation interested in tackling and solving some of the biggest challenges that we're currently facing.
So you had a lot of people talking to each other about everything. Do you think the whole message is to the EU and to NATO, you're going to have to defend yourselves? It's time to stop ignoring your defense industry?
So, you know, I've just edited a book on speeches given on our stage over the last 60 years. And to be fair, Americans have said virtually the same thing on our stage for the last 60 years. Dear Europeans, we love you dearly, but please get your act together. Learn how to defend yourself. Learn how to stand on your own two feet. And I'm pretty sure that at some point the Trump administration has said, you know, let's not try the same wake-up call approach again. Let's use something that we call pressure point diplomacy. You know, let's exert maximum pressure on the Europeans to get their shit together. And I think that is what JD has done.
So do you think they got the message, or is the money just not there?
No, you see, this is a really complicated question, Brian, because I think they got the message, but some of the other Trump administration policies on tariffs and others may actually make it even harder for Europeans to find the money. There is money in the system, and we certainly need to do and can do much more. But a more positive narrative on trade with our biggest trading partner, the United States, would help us to find even more money to the right things.
Some are doing the right things. Poland's doing the right thing. Sweden, Finland are doing the right thing. They are spending. They understand the urgency in the Baltics. It seems like France, England, Spain, they don't seem to be getting the message. And I know the UK is looking at a contraction in their economy, and they know how to fight. They just don't necessarily have the investment in there. What could the U.S. do to help them besides diminishing tariffs, a friend and family's discount for some of the weaponry that we have?
I that may actually be a pretty disruptive and creative idea, and I'm pretty sure that we'll all gladly take the discount. But isn't the point that Americans believe that Europe is already getting too much of a discount on, you know, freedom and defense, and that we need to actually pay more? You see, I think it's slightly unfair to compare Germany with Poland and the Baltics. We're talking about much lower sums for them. For Poland to go to 5% of GDP is a hell of a lot easier than for Germany with a massively bigger GDP. Having said this, there are a lot of things that we can do, and I think where the U.S. can do even more to get us to do the right thing.
So what is Germany capable of doing? What's the sentiment in Germany for defense spending? Immediately after the invasion in Ukraine, there was a sense we're going to start spending more. And that just kind of waned, it seems.
We call it Zeitenwende, that sort of this turn of an era. You have seen massive additional investment of 100 billion over the last 2.5 years in German defense. We've bought the F-35. We've bought Chinook helicopters. We have done a lot. But, you know, at some point, it's no longer about equipment. We need to get troop levels back up. We're currently at around 175K, which is nothing. In order to fulfill our NATO defense plan commitments, we'd need to go upwards of 250, even 300,000. So getting people is where we need to invest currently. So we probably need a pay raise throughout the forces. We need to increase the benefit systems. It's those things which are less sexy, I understand, but almost as important as buying the right number of tanks and buying the right American planes.
So what about the constitutionally? How is Germany limited to growth in terms of military?
So I guess we have something called the debt brake, Schuldenbremse, another great German word, which means we can't make more than 3% deficit per year. So one possible way to get around that is to exclude defense spending from the debt brake rules, both on a national level, so that is a German level, but also across the European Union. That would help tremendously. We would then also need to find new rules on investment guarantees so that our defense industry can ramp up and have some kind of investment security. If that comes out of things that are in addition to the standard budget, I think we've come a long way.
Where are we at with the Ukraine war? How concerned are the Europeans with what's happening in Ukraine? And also, the Russians have paid a terrible price. I mean, if they knew they could go, they would pay this type of price. I doubted they would have won in the way they won in. So where are we at right now?
We're in a really bad place, Brian. The Ukrainians aren't winning. The Russians keep going. The Europeans haven't done enough to get Ukraine where it should be. And I share the worries of many of my European, you know, friends and family that we've now reached a really difficult point with pressure from the United States, for good reason, growing for a negotiated settlement, but us Europeans not having done enough to get the Ukrainians in the best possible negotiation spot.
Right. So what more are the Europeans capable of doing? And do you think what do you think the message that Macron and Starmer are going to bring to Trump next week?
Okay. So first of all, I think it's great that they are going to go to Ukraine and then to see the president. But, you know, I would have wished for a much stronger unified European signal. Why is it, you know, individual prime ministers? Why is it not all of us? This is one of the biggest problems we currently have. And I very much hope that the U.S. administration sees the value in a strong and unified Europe, able to pick up the pieces, able to actually play its part, because this fragmentation that we're currently seeing with, you know, French and British leaders doing stuff on their own rather than in a European coordinated fashion is something that the U.S. really sees and wants to see. If you help us become more unified, if you help us to find money in our budgets, our budgets, to invest in defense, it will pay handsomely for you down the road.
I hear you, Benedikt Frank. Before I let you go, and you're vice chair and CEO of the Munich Security Conference, when you look at the talks going on in Saudi Arabia, do you look at that as a positive thing or a negative thing? Do you ever see a time when Vladimir Putin would be accepted into the European community from what you know of him?
I think talking with each other is always better than talking about each other. I'm grateful to those that keep trying. I obviously wish that whatever is discussed is not done over the heads of the Ukrainians. I hope that at some point the Europeans will earn their place at the table. But in the meantime, I think it's perfectly okay to start talking about talking somewhere, even if it's Saudi Arabia.
All right. Do you see a time when Vladimir Putin could ever change his ways and be part of the European community?
I think, you know, we've sort of forgotten that the only person responsible for this war and the only person who could end this war in a heartbeat is Vladimir Putin. But if he agrees to bring this war to an end, if he agrees to make up for the enormous damages that his decision has caused, I can well imagine that, you know, European countries will start talking with Russians again. We Europeans have no interest in a weak Russia. We have no interest in a tumbling Russia. We want a strong and constructive and rich Russia that buys our goods and that helps us solve global challenges. So there is no, you know, ad infinitum veto on talking to Putin.
Have we made progress in getting you guys natural gas, got the terminals in place to actually be the supplier for Europe?
So I guess, yes, you have. The German government, you know, which is criticized for many things, has changed its dependency on Russian, you know, fossil fuels from 100% to 0% in a year and a bit. And obviously, U.S. resources are part of the match.
Thanks so much. I hope to be there next year, Benedikt. Frank, you were kind enough to invite me. I unfortunately could not do it, but I'd love to be there because so much is going on. You put together a heck of a conference, really made a lot of news. Thanks so much.
We'd love to have you. Next year is on me.
Absolutely. Great. When we come back, thank you, Benedikt, calling us from Germany. Good job. 1-866-408-7669. Teresa Payton at the bottom of the hour. A little bit later on in this Friday edition, an interview exclusive with President Trump.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Menendez brothers, an exclusive new interview.
Eric and Lyle, first of all, welcome to our podcast.
Hi, Harvey. Hey, Harvey, as well.
Two angry men on all podcast platforms.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We went with our seventh-string quarterback, and we lost by a point and a half, and we actually picked up a congressional seat. So if you're asking me, did I think that she was going to win and she didn't win? Yes, all the polling showed it even. It turned out to be a point and a half race, and you lost seats. But if you have, and I'm telling the Democrats, just sit there, play possum, let them go, let them go, let them go. Poll numbers are declining. The collapse is already underway. Let's see when they put the Medicaid budget, when they put the tax, the $4.5 trillion of tax cuts to wealthy people. Just let the ball come to you. We don't need to be aggressive now.
James Carville says, just relax, play possum. Good luck with that. Right now, you have really no choice. It's not as if they said we can dig in. We watched. They don't like some nominees. They don't like Cash Patel. They protest outside. They didn't want they didn't want Tulsi Gabbard. They protested. They didn't vote. But the bottom line is everyone got through. And if they just did a voterama on a budget bill in the Senate, 51-48, they only lost one. That was Rand Paul. So that got through, too. In the House, things are holding steady. So some resolutions are passed. So go ahead. I just don't know if James Carville understands there is no choice, really. Unless you're going to start initiating, you fight. They're fighting everything. They're fighting all the Doge cuts. They're fighting all. I mean, they're not voting for any outside Fetterman. They're really not voting for any nominee. So I don't know if you could take his advice or you could not take advice. But he is so overrated. I mean, this guy guaranteed that Kamala Harris would win. He talked about how great she was and how she was coming into her own, and never really criticized Joe Biden until the last year, but not along the way. So I think that he is like Charles Barkley. He's like John McEnroe. What he is a big name, always gives blunt assessments, but I think he's highly overrated as an analyst. Keep in mind, he won two elections for Bill Clinton. The re-election was a walk in the park against Bob Dole. Here is the first 30 days, a different take from Stephen Miller. Here's what he says he has characterized the first 30 days. He did this yesterday. Cut three.
President Trump is doing exactly what he promised. And he's doing what Americans have begged and pleaded for generations, but no one has done. He's not just talking about cutting waste out of government. He's laying off unproductive federal workers who are taking your tax dollars away from you. He is cutting out government programs that don't work or that, worse, abuse and hurt the American people. He's stopping federal censorship. He's stopping weaponized government. He's stopping the use of our intelligence services and our law enforcement services to hurt Americans. And instead, he's using those powers to protect Americans and American lives. President Trump following through on every single thing he campaigned on in record time.
Right. And there are the executive orders, which show they have a duration when you leave. And then Elon Musk said an interesting thing. He goes, just because you sign it, Mr. President, doesn't mean people are doing it. Yesterday, there was Black History Month, and the President of the United States did not pass up on that opportunity. He put statues on the National Garden of American Heroes: Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, Billie Holiday, Aretha Franklin, Coretta Scott King, Frederick Douglass, Jackie Robinson, Martin Luther King, Muhammad Ali, Kobe Bryant. Tiger Woods was actually there with the president for a different reason. He was there, I believe, for the Live PGA merger talks. He says they've hit an impasse. Live plays at his golf courses. The PGA used to play at his golf courses, but they thought it was politically incorrect for him to do it, and they kind of pulled out. He obviously does not hold it against them, but because he brought them back together. Here's what he said yesterday from the White House about Black History Month, 38.
As you know, the Americans are going to be celebrating something very important coming up, our 250th anniversary, our nation's founding. And when we do, we're going to look forward to honoring the contributions of countless Black Americans who fought to win and protect and expand American freedom from the very, very beginning. And some of my good friends are here today, and I appreciate you being. I'm not going to call out your names because Tiger will get very bored. He'll say, this is a little boring. This is a little boring if we do that. But I want to thank you all for being here. You are our friends, and we appreciate this.
And I'd love to see a plan, too, to continue to shore up African-American support. So get this. Trump's best showing for the GOP. Remember, Mitt Romney, John McCain, George W. Bush. This is the best Republicans have done in 20 years. 18 to 29, they did the best ever. Black voters overall, the best in 48 years. Hispanics, the best in 52 years. Among Black voters in 2020, he got 13 Black male voters. He got 13% of the vote. In 2024, it almost doubled, 25%. Overall, in 2020, he got 8% of the Black vote in 2020. In 2024, he got 15% of the Black vote. That has got to scare the heck out of Democrats, because they've been maximizing the African-American community and really riding the cities to success in getting mayor jobs and in getting maybe some of these states to flip. Because New York State is only controlled by Democrats because of New York City. Same thing with Chicago, Illinois. Same thing with Pennsylvania. Philadelphia is the only thing that puts it in play. Now, if you start making gains there, and the question is, what does the Black community want? Same thing as all American communities want. Just a good opportunity, a great opportunity. And if there are prejudicial roadblocks, look for this administration to knock it down. But just to level the playing field, what do you think? 1-866-408-7669. The cyber challenge is out there. Streamlining operations. That's what Doge is trying to do. Teresa Payton on that next. And also the role of Silicon Valley in this administration. So much going on. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm not going to waste a penny. I have a zero tolerance. And Congress should want me to ensure that there's accountability and oversight. The way the agreements were written, when the money goes through the eight primary recipients receiving $20 billion as a pass-through, when it goes to the sub-grantees, the EPA isn't even a party to those account control agreements.
So that is some of the outrageous things EPA Director Lee Zeldin has found. He found $20 billion on a pass-through when it goes to sub-agreements, guarantees. The EPA is finding a whole bunch of money, some of which, get this, is going to Stacey Abrams. There's two things that happen. It's DEI and it's green technology. All these green projects are the two motivating factors of the entire and all the Biden years. Joining us now is Teresa Payton, who used to do this cybersecurity when she worked for George W. Bush. Teresa, your take on the role of these investigations into where this money's going.
This is long overdue. I mean, we know as a nation that we're broke, so it's really important to follow the money. And, you know, our taxpayer dollars need to be spent on things like infrastructure, cybersecurity, modernization, innovation. And when you see it being spent on things that don't align with those strategic goals of the United States and its citizens, you have to wonder and ask yourself why. So it's great that we now have this transparency so we can do something about it.
Here's more from Lee Zeldin on what he found. Cut 20.
So this is $2 billion of that $20 billion that was parked at this bank outside of government towards the end of the Biden administration. Power Forward Communities, which Stacey Abrams is part of, only received $100 in 2023. They then got $2 billion in this grant in 2024. Now, I was just reading over the grant agreement, Laura. It gives the organization, this nonprofit, 21 days to distribute $2 billion. But this is the crazy part. And it's giving the entity 90 days to complete a training called How to Develop a Budget. If an organization needs to take a training on how to develop a budget, one, they should be taking the training before they're spending a dollar, but they definitely shouldn't be getting $2 billion.
What are your thoughts about the way government works, by the way, Lee describing it? He seems outraged by it. Are you surprised by it?
I am surprised. I mean, we do know that we've had over the years where budget dollars get earmarked for pet projects at different states and things like that. I mean, that's been happening for a very long time. But to hear something like that is really disappointing. I mean, I've got kids. You've got kids. I mean, we teach them at home how to do a budget and how to spend within their means and to achieve their goals. We do it as a family. You do as a family, Brian. And so to hear that is really dismaying. And when I see numbers trending in the wrong direction, so I see technology innovation in this country trending in the wrong direction. I see us, you know, right now, I think it's a very long race, but we're behind China in our AI and quantum computing. I look at the numbers from OMB on cyber incidents. In fiscal year 2022, OMB reported over 30,000 cyber incidents happen at federal departments and agencies. In fiscal year 2023, Brian, OMB reported over 32,000. The numbers are going in the wrong direction. We need to find out where this money is going and redirect it to the right priorities.
I would certainly help. So we're getting the money, we're getting the savings. How do you feel about, I want to pare down the debt, and then President Trump is considering getting a certain percentage and giving it to the American people, giving them $5,000 each. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Hey, look, anytime hardworking taxpayers can get their money back, I think is a great day. I don't pretend to understand whether or not that's going to have a significant impact on inflation. But the one thing I do know is America's broke. We've got a debt and a deficit that need attention. So whether it goes directly into our pockets, helping hardworking people every day who deserve to have as much of their money as possible that they earned, or if it goes to pay down the debt or the deficit, I'm going to leave it to kind of the big thinkers and policy people to make that decision. But I think it's a step in the right direction. And what I love about this is, regardless of what that final decision is about giving the money back to the people, which I think is a great idea, what I love about this is we now have the transparency. We have to remove the complexity of the budget and have transparency. So on the going forward, less of our money is required from us, and Americans can keep more money in their pockets every day to raise their families and to achieve the American dream.
Yeah, I think so. But some people aren't impressed, like that Texas Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, cut 19.
Now, President Trump says he likes the idea of giving some of the savings from DOGE back to Americans as kind of a dividend. Would you support that?
No, we are not in the business of giving out money. And honestly, I don't know what $5,000 will do for you if you are unable to find a job, because I am telling people we are headed towards a recession.
I don't, you're not an economist, but that's an interesting take, heading towards a recession. $5,000 doesn't mean much. That's someone who's pretty much out of touch.
I mean, I'd gladly take her $5,000 if she doesn't want it,
yeah.
Brian. I think, you know, there's different ways for the cost savings to be distributed. At the end of the day, who did the cost savings belong to? It belongs to the American people. It was taken out of their pockets to fund budgets that they did not have. They thought they were voting for people that were voting on budgets, but they didn't have transparency into all of this. And so it would send a strong message to all elected officials who have responsibility for our nation's budget. We now have transparency. We see you. We've been heard. And we don't agree with how you've been spending our money. And they can vote differently. And giving $5,000 back, whether it goes towards the debt, the deficit, or back in Americans' pockets, is never a bad idea. Where would she prefer the money to go?
Great point. So you don't have a problem with these 20-somethings going through education, the Treasury, the Pentagon, looking at budgets and trying to find structural problems. What skill set do they bring to government? You've been on the inside, now you're on the outside.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. First, what I want people to hear is from having had a seat on the inside, I'm going to assume that White House counsel has done their job, made sure people are in the right positions as contractors, consultants, special employees, whatever it is, and that everybody's been read into what their access and responsibilities are, and that that's all been set up properly. There's plenty of federal mandates, the Privacy Act of 1974, which predates iPhones, which came out in 2007, but there's plenty of mandates that are in place that have strict safeguards for PII. The other thing I would say is, like, if Musk and these 20-somethings had unfettered access, everyone's Roomba would be driving a Tesla by now. So, you know, we need to, like, stop with the histrionics. We've not seen any proof that people are looking at individual records. And DOJ has actually confirmed they're looking at aggregate data, not personal details. Here's what these young people bring. First of all, they are unfettered by all the things that you can't do, that won't happen, that won't be successful. They've got optimism. They've got cutting edge skills. They're innovative. They're creative. And really emotionally detached from these systems.
Mm-hmm.
So they are going in and doing what I like to refer to as data classification, data mapping. They're basically saying, what does this system hold in it? And then how do I data map it? How do I data classify it? And then how do I produce reports from it so I can get to transparency? That's really what they're doing. They're like tabulating results, almost like, you know, geniuses creating these statistical models and being able to create traceability through these very complex systems. And Brian, if we want our systems to be safe, we have to know what we need to retire. We have to understand the complexity.
Yeah.
Because the enemy, our nation states and cyber criminal syndicates, hide in the complexity. We have to remove it.
Teresa Payton with us. So Teresa, you point out some of these people on the Trump, on the Musk team. One of the kids won a $250,000 prize for an AI to reveal hidden contents of an ancient Roman document. Another was given $100,000 in seed money by OpenAI to found his own startup. So these guys have, and women have already separated themselves and impressed one of the smartest men in the world, Elon Musk. They're not just pulled off the street.
Yeah, you're right about that. And they would have gone through some type of a background check, again, given the rules of the road. And there is somebody at each department and agency who is there, who is working with them. And, you know, so there is oversight. I think people misunderstand when you see a team moving at sort of just the speed of, you know, kind of the processing speed that they're moving at, they assume it's because they're not being careful about privacy and security. You shouldn't assume that. You should assume they're coming in unencumbered by, well, everything has to be done this way because it's been done this way since the Privacy Act of 1974. So don't assume they're breaking all the rules and regulations just because they're moving at a speed and a pace that you haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. The bureaucracy is out of their way, and they're taking this opportunity to use modern technology and innovative creative thinking and design to get to the answers they're seeking. And they're really doing an investigation. That's the other thing I want people to understand is in the early days of an investigation, my team and I, we will have early findings, and we always tell people these are not the final findings. And a lot of times what you find in the early days, it actually gets worse the further along your investigation gets. So the numbers are going to change. The things that we're learning today are going to change over time because these investigations are ongoing.
All right. Lastly, I want you to hear what Elon Musk said about one of his approaches. He's a rich guy. He's basically donating his time. Cut to.
The fundamental goal of our immigration policy, of our border policy, of DOGE saving taxpayer money, the fundamental goal is we want your children and grandchildren to be able to raise a family in security and comfort in the country that we all love. That is the whole goal of President Trump's agenda.
Yeah, so that's his whole goal. Here's what Elon Musk said on this other sheet that I had for my interview with President Trump coming up last hour. This is what he said. Yeah, and a moment. Elon Musk came out and he expressed an urgency that we don't have the luxury anymore of just going on with the big deficit, that the deficit is taking so much money away that we can, outstrapped the defense spending. Here's what he said about rich people.
There's a lot of rich people out there. They should be caring more about the country, because the reason they should be caring more about the country is if America falls, what do you think is going to happen to your business? The ship of America must be strong. The ship of America cannot sink. If it sinks, we all sink with it.
You think so? Do you agree?
Yeah, we need everybody to care about America, and certainly people who are, you know, well off. We do need everybody to contribute here, and I'm just so grateful. We are so fortunate that we have people like Elon Musk. You also have Bill Ackman. You have, so many people who have come to the table and said, I want to be a part of making sure that America is great, continues to be great, and is always great in the future. So you have a lot of people coming to the table who are saying, I want to contribute and I want to participate in this. And it's amazing to me that, I've heard that Elon is sleeping on the floor. He's working around the clock. He's also got businesses that he runs. And I think it's incredible. You may not agree with everything that's coming out of this, and I do know people are getting laid off. And my thoughts and prayers are with everybody who's going through layoffs. I've gone through it in corporate America. I've had to lay people off in the past in corporate America. There's a real human impact to this, but we have to make these tough decisions now. It's only going to get worse. The longer we wait, the more people will be impacted. And so this is a tough time for those people who are losing their jobs. But, at the end of the day, new doors will open for them and the economy will be better. It's just a tough time. There is a human element to this, but I'm just so glad. And his statement is exactly right. Everybody in America, rich, poor, everybody needs to focus on what needs to be done next.
Gotcha. Teresa Payne, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Take care. Be safe out there.
I will. I'm going to try. When we come back, I'll be able to open up the phones, 1-866-408-7669. Next hour, or probably the next hour, judging by the hours in which you take the show, you'll hear an interview with President Trump. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So I had a chance to talk to President Trump. I kind of left Fox and Friends, had to run out and do the interview. So you're going to hear the whole thing next hour right here on the Brian Kilmeade Radio Show. But I did ask him what he did yesterday, and that was try to get the LIV and PGA together on some type of merger. And here's how it sounded. Yesterday, you called the USA hockey team. They lost in overtime to Canada, but the way they stood up in Canada really stood out and upset the team. They lose in overtime yesterday. What did you say to the USA hockey team? Because they were all motivated afterwards, very patriotic people. And what do you say to Justin Trudeau, who's kind of taunting you afterwards, saying Canada will always be for Canadians and will always, to paraphrase, will always own hockey?
Well, we won the first game. The second game was a great game. It could have gone either way. Justin's a loser, always has been. And, he's just a guy that really doesn't – I think he's done a very bad job for Canada. He's taken it radical left, and he's going to lose the election. It looks like pretty big. If he even runs, I don't know.
He's not running.
He's not going to run. Looks like he's not going to run. That's a smart move because he wouldn't have a chance of winning. So, you know, Justin's sort of a nice guy, but he's a loser. And the game was a fantastic game. I watched the end of it. I was making a speech to the governors of our country, so I couldn't watch most of it. But I got back. I watched the end. It was a great game. I mean, both teams played really well. I thought it was a terrific thing. And I congratulate the Canadian team because the American team is fantastic. But they each won one game.
But here's the thing, Mr. President. They booed our national anthem, and in Boston, we did not boo theirs. Are you proud of the people that attended?
Yeah, I think it's great that they did. And we have a good relationship with Canada. Not with Justin, because Justin's he's too far radical left. He's so radical left, he's killing Canada. Canada's doing terribly right now. And
right.
His policies, his radical left, Marxist policies have absolutely destroyed Canada. Canada's in bad shape.
So, Mr. President, a couple of things. You're trying to get Liv and the PGA together. What kind of progress did you make? And could your next project be college sports between the NIL and everything else? Their money's pouring in, but certain colleges are getting locked out. Are you concerned about the direction of college sports? And is that something you want to get involved in?
Well, that's a decision in colleges that should have been appealed. I mean, I couldn't believe how easily they seem to have given up on that. And I don't like what's happening in college sports. I don't like that decision that was made. College sports was so great for so many years, and they go in and they win one case. I don't know that that case was appealed. You know, I won a lot of cases, as you know better than anybody, on appeal.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on with that. I think it was a terrible decision and very bad for college sports. Absolutely.
All right. Do you see yourself playing a role in that, of maybe bringing sides together to try to get
some? They're still fighting it, but are they fighting it? They didn't fight the decision. Why didn't somebody go in and appeal the decision?
Right.
Now, maybe they did, but it doesn't seem to me that they did, but maybe they did. But,
okay. You
know, you got to fight these cases right until the end. You got to take them up to the Supreme Court. You have judges, you have radicalized judges, but, you have to take these cases up to the Supreme Court sometimes. It just seems to me that they didn't use the power of the appellate courts.
So that's a little of the interview with President Trump. We had a wide swath, handled Ukraine, talked about the budget, talked about the economy. We also talked about Hamas, what's going to be next with Israel, and all bets are off. Crispin, you're in Arizona. Hey, Crispin.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you.
What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is, say if you just take 100,000 people, and I know 65,000 voluntarily withdraw from the jobs. If you take 100,000 people at 50,000, that's about $5 billion, a drop in the bucket. The last tax break that Trump gave was $1.9 trillion, and 65% went to people making over $130,000 a year. That amount is like $1.2 to $1.3 trillion. If you're going to get after the excess spending, you have to go after a military waste and the rich, make the rich pay. Instead, he's trying to offer a $5,000 bribe.
But I would say the top 10% pay 70% of all taxes. You just want to pay them more? That would be almost 60% of their income. I want them putting that money back into the economy. I think efficiency, and with the Pentagon, you're 100% right, Crispin.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Brian Kilmeade Show. It's my privilege to bring in the 45th and the 47th President of the United States. The first time interviewing you in your second term. Mr. President, how does the first 30 days feel?
Well, I have the best poll numbers I've ever had, so that feels good. It's always nice. We won all seven swing states in addition, and we got the popular vote by millions of votes. But now I have much higher poll numbers than even the election, so I've never had such wonderful numbers. People have always said, well, I don't know, is he doing good or don't we know or whatever, but I guess people did feel we did a great job in term one, and that's how we won. But I just got them, the best poll numbers I've ever had, beating everybody. So that's nice. That's always
right. Nice,
Brian.
I know. You always like to keep score. Mr. President, the one thing that you inherited, and that is Hamas, since October 7th, they've been at war, and the IDF has been at war with Hamas. Yesterday, we got 4 hostages back in caskets, 2 of which were children, 9 months and 4 years old. And the mom that they gave back was not even the right body. As we wait for 6 more hostages to be returned on Saturday, what do you think should happen with Benjamin Netanyahu, the IDF, and Hamas?
Well, I speak to him, and he's certainly, he's actually not torn. I mean, you know where he stands, and he would like to go in. He just is so angry, and he should be. If he's not angry, then there'd be something wrong with him, frankly. He is very angry. He's a very angry man at what happened, especially what happened yesterday with these kids. They were babies, and it's rough stuff. It's rough stuff, and it looked like they were celebrating as they were bringing the bodies back. And you know, it's the scene is not even believable, Brian. When you see what's happening, it's sort of not even believable. It's so barbaric. You wouldn't think that could happen in a modern age, but it happened.
You dropped off 2,000-pound bombs to them that they had ordered a while ago. You said, basically, you're not going to tell them not to go into any province. What Joe Biden was saying, don't go into Rafah. You better stop. Humanitarian aid here, threatening with sanctions. You have a different approach. It's Prime Minister, do what you have to do. So he's got the decision to make. Do I worry about the 30-plus hostages that may still be alive? Or do I finish off a terrorist organization that's trying to destroy you? Are you okay either way?
I am. I really am. It's, you know, when you see what's happening here, it's a hard thing to say. You just wonder the condition of the hostages that they have. One group came in so bad, looked like it was concentration camp in Germany. This was a terrible, terrible thing when I looked. And then the other day, a group came in which was not as bad, actually not really closely as bad. But I think really a lot of the people they have are in such bad shape. They're so violent and vicious. I think a lot of people, if you look, I think they're in really bad shape. Right. I really do. I think they're trying to give the best ones first. And if the best ones are the ones I'm seeing, they're in really bad shape. You have to make a decision. You know, it's a decision that has to be made. It's a rough decision. But the scene yesterday was really terrible because you're talking about babies.
Mr. President, there's no scenario where there's a two-state solution.
This is really a low level.
There's no scenario where there's a two-state solution anymore. I know Mike Waltz, your national security advisor, says there's no way Hamas is in charge there. So it seems like we're the ultimate impasse. Your idea of taking over Gaza, making it more international, wasn't necessarily well received by Jordan or Egypt. So what's next, do you know?
Well, we paid Jordan and Egypt billions of dollars a year. And I was a little surprised they'd say that, but they did. And I'll tell you, the way to do it is my plan. I think that's the plan that really works. But I'm not forcing it. I'm just going to sit back and recommend it. And then the U.S. would own the site. It'd be no Hamas. And there'd be development. And you'd start all over again with a clean plate.
Right.
Another way of doing it, but I don't think it would work, would be to do it with people there. But I just don't see that working. I mean, it's been so many years, so many decades of killing on that site. That is one dangerous place. And right. Hamas would be there, I guess, depending on what happens over the next little while. But the question is, can you wipe them all out? You know, they're so interspersed among people. And it's certainly not an easy thing to do. But I liked my plan. I thought my plan was good. You get them out, you move them, you build a beautiful community and a permanent community. And you then take the site, the Gaza Strip, you take Gaza, and it's really essentially leveled now. You don't have too much to do other than, you know, remove debris. It's really that place is not livable.
Right.
And if you gave the people a choice between that and living in a nice community, I think I know where they'd go. But we'll see what happens. I thought it was great because the location is, you know, it's a great location. I don't know why Israel ever gave that up. Why did they give it up? Yeah. I guess they look at us and say, why did you give up the Panama Canal, Brian? Right.
It's all connected. Ariel Sharon decided to do that.
I can't believe it. You look down on a map, they have the whole ocean. And somebody from Israel, I guess, you know, I can tell you who, but it was well known, but he decided to give it up.
Yeah.
It's one of the It's one of the bad real estate deals. I see a lot of bad real estate deals. That's one of them right there.
So I'm going to have more about Ukraine. We have so much more to talk about the economy. We'll have that straight ahead. President saying whatever BB wants, he should go do. He's got the 2,000-pound bombs, and you have the horrible situation with the slow let go of all the hostages. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show, my interview with President Trump, exclusive to us for this hour. Don't move.
The Commander-in-Chief has his back.
Hey, Brian.
Yes.
I have no loyalty to your radio show. I only have loyalty to you. So if you're doing radio, that's good. If you're doing television, that's good, too. And if you're writing something, that'll be fine, too.
It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. My chance to sit down and talk to President Trump, calling us from the White House. So we spoke about an hour ago. We're breaking it up, letting you hear the whole thing for the first time. Now, we talked to you about Hamas and the whole horrific situation with the hostages and what he would do. And essentially, BB's got a green light. Now, I talk about the number one story in the world, and that's Ukraine, the president's view. And you'll be interested to hear what he really thinks happened to start this war. Watch. President, cover of every newspaper just about is your stance in Ukraine. I was looking up. I almost found no indications that you said anything bad about Zelensky up until the last few days. And it seems as though when he didn't take the mineral deal and was critical of you for having a delegation talk in Saudi Arabia with Russia, that was a turning point for you, correct?
I've been watching this man for years now. As his cities get demolished, as his people get killed, as his soldiers get decimated, where you have old men and young men. You have men that are too old to fight, men that are too young to fight. I've been watching this for years, and it's a war that shouldn't have started. I know because I was there and I had it. It didn't start. Would have never started. If I won the election, which I did, it's a war that never, ever would have started. So I've been watching for years, and I've been watching him negotiate with no cards. He has no cards. And you get sick of it. You just get sick of it. And I've had it. And he then made a deal with us for rare earth and things. And who knows what rare earth is worth, you know, but at least it's something. And who knows what it's worth? Who knows if they even have it? But we made a deal with rare earth, and Secretary of Treasury, a very good guy, actually went there, and they couldn't even come close to getting a deal done. And frankly, I wish he didn't go there, waste all of his time like that. But they couldn't get close. They met.
Right.
And then when he wanted to get it closed, he was unable to meet him again. But so it was just a wasted trip, a dangerous trip, too. I didn't like it that he was doing it because, you know, he's a good man. I didn't want him to put himself under danger because I had a feeling something like that would happen. But look what you have. You have a man who's led a country that had the most beautiful cities that they demolished, had the most beautiful domes. Those domes are the most beautiful
in the
world.
But that's Russia's fault, though, Mr. President. Russia
did demolished 1,000-year-old domes, and everything's demolished. I mean, it's like a demolition site, though. It's sort of like Gaza. In fact, it's more at least Gaza has a couple of buildings standing. Right. I mean, this place, you take a look at the demolition of so many of those cities, and all those people are killed. Never to come back again.
But, Mr. President, that's Vladimir Putin's fault. Don't you agree?
I get tired of listening to it. I'll tell you what. I've seen it enough. And then he complains that he's not at a meeting that we're having with Saudi Arabia trying to intermediate a peace. Well, he's been at meetings for 3 years with a very with a president who didn't know what the hell he was doing. He's been at meetings for 3 years. And nothing got done. So I don't think he's very important to be at meetings, to be honest with you. He's been there for 3 years. He makes it very hard to make deals. But look what's happened to his country. It's been demolished.
But no, I hear you.
He's going to go back.
But Mr. President, you know who's to blame for that.
Don't you think
it's Vladimir Putin that did the invasion unwarranted to try to take back land he had no right to? And don't you think fundamentally that's that? And if you could just now both sides want to talk, it seems. So we should just get to that point.
They only want to talk because of me. If I wasn't involved, they wouldn't be talking to each other. And Russia would continue to, you know, go through Ukraine, because they are going through, Brian. They've taken a lot of land. And Russia would continue the march through Ukraine. If it wasn't for me, they wouldn't be talking at all. I'm the only reason they're talking.
No, no, I think that everybody agrees with that. We have Macron coming to see you for France, and then Stormer for the UK this week to move forward.
Yeah, but they didn't do anything either. The war is going on. There's no meetings with Russia, no nothing.
Right.
You know, they haven't done anything. And I, if you know, Macron's a friend of mine, and I've met with the prime minister, and you know, he's a very nice guy, but nobody's done anything. And I've been watching this go on for years. And I'm doing it for one reason. I hate the killing. I hate to see those young people killed. They're not Americans. They're Russians and Ukrainians. I hate to see the killing.
So I just saw the Polish president just tweeted, and he essentially told Zelensky to go back and do a deal with you and try to get to peace. And he just put that out a short while ago. So do you believe that the Russians want a deal? And even though they're the aggressors in this situation, they want a deal because they've had that 700,000 casualties. They're losing 46,000 a month, too. So do you believe they were sincere in Saudi Arabia?
Look, Russia, and who is the Polish? Are you talking about
Duda? Yep.
Was it Duda that put it out?
Yes.
Because you have different leaders in Poland. It's very interesting. But, no, look, you ready? Russia did not attack during my administration. But I will say he hates Zelensky. He hates him with a tremendous passion. You're lucky you don't hate people, Brian. You don't hate anybody. You've never,
but it's
you've
mutual,
never been a hater.
I'll give you the exact read. He said, I suggest that President Zelensky remain committed to the course of calm, constructive cooperation with Donald Trump. I trust that goodwill and honesty from a former foundation of the U.S. negotiation strategy. I have no doubt that President Trump is guided by a deep sense of responsibility for global stability and peace. And he said he just spoke to Zelensky. So are you expecting a call from, would you accept a call from Zelensky today?
Yeah, of course. I'm not playing games. I don't accept or not accept calls. Of course I'll take a call from him. But he's been negotiating for 3 years. And just so you know, when you say Russia was the attacker, yes.
Yep.
Russia was attacked. Russia attacked, but there was no reason for them to attack. You could have talked him out. There was no reason that he should have attacked. That whole thing was going on for years. There was no reason he was going in. It should have never happened. That war should have never happened. And I'm telling you, the way they talked, I said, you know, these guys are going to go into a war. Every time I say, oh, it's not Russia's fault, I always get slammed by the fake news. But I'm telling you, Biden said the wrong things. Zelensky said the wrong things. They got attacked by somebody that's much bigger and much stronger, which is a bad thing to do. And you don't do that. But Russia could have been talked out of that so easily. That should never have been a war. And all those dead people shouldn't be dead, and all those cities shouldn't be demolished right now. So when Zelensky said, he wasn't invited to a meeting, I mean, it wasn't a priority because he did such a bad job in negotiating so far. Number one, you shouldn't have had a war. And if you did, it should have been solved and settled immediately. It could have been.
Mr. President, I think you're 100% right. There's two things.
3 years ago.
Zelensky made two mistakes in 3 days. He criticized you, and then he criticized the meeting, and then he said, I'm walking away from the deal, which was, I think, 55% of their rare earth minerals. It would have allowed America to have a stake there, and nobody would attack Ukraine if America had business there. Having said that, I think if both sides get, do you think the Russians should be celebrating right now because they hear the rhetoric coming from the White House?
No, because if I got out, I think they really want to make a deal. I do. They found it impossible to make a deal with Zelensky as his buildings came down. You know, the buildings came down all over. They were just raining down. You got nothing. You know, take a look at what he's going to. Let's assume I make a deal. I'm getting him back many demolished cities and the bodies of many dead people. What kind of a deal is that? What kind of a what kind of a situation is that? There was no reason right. for that.
No, I hear
now,
you.
Russia attacked, but they shouldn't have let them attack because they wouldn't have attacked if you had people that knew what they were doing. Joe Biden is a very dumb man. You know that, and I know it. Joe Biden is a very dumb man who
right.
was dumber than ever before because, you know, things have happened to him. But he had no idea what he was doing, and everything he said was wrong. And I said, you know what? I think this guy's going to cause a I think he's going to cause a war.
Right.
And that's what happened. And I will tell you, Putin could have been talked out of that so easy. But they didn't know how to talk.
So, Mr. President,
he would have been talked out of that war so easy.
You
but
have,
they didn't know how to talk.
Right, but
they said all the wrong things. And I'm not trying to make Putin like nicer or better. I'm just telling you the fact that war should have never happened. Putin would have never gone in.
And we'll see where we go from here. But, Mr. President, you have some sway with him. You definitely talk to him more than probably anybody else in the world
outside
China. He wants
to make a deal.
But here's the thing. They have
and
taken.
And he doesn't have to make
right,
a deal because if he wanted, he'd get the whole country.
But
eventually.
He's paying a huge price, as you pointed out a couple of weeks ago. They have taken about 20,000 Ukrainian kids, and they basically kidnapped them, gave them new names, and put them into homes in Russia. Can you get Vladimir Putin to reverse that? Could that be one of the precursors to show they sincerely want to negotiate?
I believe I could, yes. I didn't know too much about it. I was hearing about it yesterday. It's pretty tough stuff, but I believe I could do that, yes.
So there you go. That's my interview with President Trump. The number one issue is Ukraine. He does admit flat out it was Russia that attacked. We know that. I know he got a little ticked off, but he's very clear on where we go from here, and he would take a Zelensky call. Of course, as he said, he's not playing games. It's the same way. He's serious, but he's also willing to get to an end goal. That's how I see it. Much more to come. My interview with President Trump continues. Brian Kilmeade.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everybody. President Trump gave us some quality time today. I appreciated that. And to relate to you, before his day got started, he started with us. So you heard the first half hour. We got some more time. It was supposed to be 15 minutes. President was getting into it. In fact, we could have had a little bit more time if I didn't have to run back to TV. And I missed the segment anyway. More on that later. But when we did talk about the economy. And did talk about what we have to do to get our economy going in the right direction. And when it becomes his economy. Let's listen. Great. I want to talk about something different. Right now, Kathy Hochul says, game on. You drew first blood as you got rid of. Have you got rid of congestion pricing in New York City? What's your response to her? In fact,
well,
here is what you said exactly.
Was very
cut one.
Bad
listen to this, Mr.
New
President.
York.
Listen to this.
And
cut one.
It was going to kill Manhattan and certain parts of New York. Ultimately, when Manhattan goes, the whole state goes. Manhattan is not doing well to start off with. And all you're doing with congestion pricing is saying, don't go in. And it's like $15 a day.
Yep.
And if you're a shoe salesman or if you're a waiter or if you're the owner of a restaurant or the owner of just about any business, it's a disaster. It's been a disaster every place it's been used. And it is. And, you know, they call me for help, and yet nobody's treated me worse than they have in Manhattan. They have a rigged court system they treated me worse than anybody. There's never been treatment like I've been treated. And that's the way they treat people. They go after people. And, you know, people think that, oh, I should come and help. I view it and I say, what a shame. But despite that and despite the way I get treated, I do help. I help New York tremendously. And everybody says I shouldn't even bother with New York the way they
right.
the way they are. It's a really vicious place from a legal standpoint, from a weaponization. It's totally weaponized. The courts are weaponized and they're horrible. And
right.
I had the best cases. Nobody could even believe. Every single one of the pundits from McCarthy to Turley to Greg Jarrett to Dershowitz said they had no case against me whatsoever. It shouldn't be brought. And you can't
right.
win in New York. You get these judges that you can't win. The whole thing is a rigged, horrible system, and it's crooked
gotcha.
And corrupt. and they put this congestion pricing on, and it would have destroyed the city even further. You would have had no business left in Manhattan. Numbers were way down. They need business. They need people to go in. They basically, it's like putting up a wall. People weren't going to go in. Everybody was going to lose their jobs. Really, it's a very, a very sinister place. What's taken place in New York over the last 8 years or so is a very, very sinister place.
And Mayor Adams is finding that out right now.
With De Blasio a little bit. But it's gone on and on and on, and it just gets worse and worse, nastier and nastier. And they got to do something about the court system in New York. It is a rigged system. It's a horrible system. I had three judges. They were totally dishonest judges. They were the most dishonest judges. Look, I've been around. I've been to many courts. And I will tell you, these are the most dishonest group of judges I've ever had. I've never seen anything like it.
I think Mayor Adams would agree with you.
It's a very corrupt place. And now on top of everything, what they want to do, and people are leaving. Businesses are leaving in record numbers, and people are leaving. And I'll tell you, Brian, it's really a shame to see such a great place go so bad. And now they put this horrible payment that you have to have for the privilege of going to a place that's not doing very well. It's a loser, and I give my secretary a great, literally a great applause for what he did.
All right, Seth, that was Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. So, Mr. President, right now the market dropped a little because Kmart or Walmart is not forecasting growth in revenues. And they look at inflation. Inflation is stubborn. You inherited it. When does it become your economy? When is it a Trump economy where we get to see if your plans are working?
Well, it takes a period of 6 months to a year. Biden really screwed up our country. He really screwed it up badly. If you look at the deficits we have with other countries, that should have been taken care of, Brian. We have a deficit with China of over $1 trillion. A trillion. And it takes a period of time. We're going to have a very strong country. It's going to take a little while to get it back, just like inflation. You know, I gave him almost no inflation, 1.2%, which is perfect. And it went up to 9.9%. Went to, I think, the worst inflation in the history of our country. But I gave him no inflation, a powerful, great economy. And he screwed it up with two ways. He spent too much, and Mitch McConnell shouldn't have approved all that stuff. Mitch McConnell did a very poor job, very poor job. He shouldn't have approved a lot of the stuff. He approved it. It was like, I said, what does he have on Mitch McConnell? It's just so sad to see that. But I gave him, and what they've done to this country is just incredible. Between the open borders and prisoners pouring in and mental patients and everything else pouring in. And it's not easy to get them. You know, they're looking all over the place. They have searches all over the place. But, you know, these are professionals at escaping. And Tom Homan's doing an unbelievable job. And Christie Noem, unbelievable job. But they really made a mess of things in foreign policy and in local policy. They have made a mess of this country, it'll be straightened out. I would say in 12 months, we're going to have a whole different country.
All right. So yesterday, it just happened, actually. They voted through the night that a Votorama and the GOP, the Republican-led Senate, just passed one of two bills. So this was adopted. It's a 5248, and they're going to get financing for defense and financing for the border. But they didn't re-up on your tax reform. You said this is what Senator Thune told me yesterday about what he's trying to do, because now you want one bill and he's giving you two. Cut four. What would that one bill consist of, and what would the second bill consist of, and why not just do one?
Well, I think I'm game, and if the House can execute on getting one done, more power to them. I think at the moment, what we're trying to do is preserve optionality for the president. The president has, you know, campaigned on and said his number one priority is securing the border, and this bill that we're doing today is heavily focused on giving the president the resources he needs to secure the border.
So your thought about the one bill that passed?
Yeah, look, The Republicans mean very well, everybody, but I think Rand Paul voted against it. Is that right?
Yeah.
Did I hear that? Oh, boy. It never ends with these guys. They have to go in grandstand. But I was very honored by the bill that he did. I think John Thune is doing a fantastic job. But it gives you optionality, Brian. We want one big, beautiful bill, as I say. And, you know, that would include many other things than what we were approved yesterday. But to have what we approved yesterday is nice. And we'll see now how the House is going to do. The House is going with the one bill concept, the Senate the two. And the Senate will come along and do, if they see good progress with the House, they'd rather have everything included also. But we're going to see what the House comes up with. They're working very hard. They think they're going to get there on one bill, and then the Senate would be able to vote on the one big, beautiful bill. That would include taxes and tax cuts, and really it'll be the biggest tax cuts in American history. And I would think it's very hard for even, you know, Democrats to vote against it.
So it sounds like you're almost open to two. You're still feeling like, let me see what happens, right?
As long as we get to the same point, you know, two bills. So now, what they approved yesterday is one part of it, and then they'd approve another part of it. You could make the case you could do three. You could do for 10. As long as we get along, you know, as long as we get them all added up and it's the same thing. I think we're in very good shape. I think that's a good signal that we got the one bill passed, because there's great unity. We have great unity in the party.
Right.
The House is great, and the Senate is great. We have fantastic unity, and I think it's going to go good. If this didn't get approved, the Democrats essentially would have approved the largest tax increase in the history of our country. And I don't think that works very well for them politically.
Right. And they keep saying your tax reform was for the rich. It is not. It was for the middle class.
Yep.
And everyone benefited across the line. That's one thing I don't think you guys do a good job pushing back on. In fact, a lot of people who were wealthy got hit on your tax reform bill. So that is one of the final segments. No, that is the final segment. We have some clips that we'll play a little bit later. The 40 minutes we had with President Trump, Griff Jenkins is here. Griff will have a full segment next, maybe take some calls in. But Trump came back and said, I know, Russia invaded, but it would never have happened under him, as he said. And he's a little ticked at Zelensky. He's ticked about the deal, walking away from the mineral deal. And he's a little ticked about the rebuke that he said to Trump, that sometimes he gets his victim of disinformation.
He did, and we'll see how that plays out. But as the reporter that I am, my genes, my DNA is telling me to run outside, get on the air with a Fox News alert, because you just made news at the end of that clip with Trump saying that he's okay with one bill or even 10 bills. That's news. You made news right there, because, again, we've heard so much about one big, beautiful bill and this standoff. And you had the House and the Senate a little bit at loggerheads there when they were doing it. The Thune said, no, we're going forward. We're going to do this. Not going to have the tax cuts. We're getting it passed. And Trump's like, this is great.
Yeah, I think that he kind of blew up Senator Thune in the middle of voting on Wednesday while they're voting back to get set for the Votorama. He said, I want one bill, because Speaker Johnson says, I can't do two bills. Yeah, I'll get the one, but I can't get the second, because there's some things that are so unpopular with certain sections of his caucus that I'd have to turn around. So if you don't want enough spending cuts, Griff Jenkins doesn't want wants more spending cuts. That's fine, but I got you the border and I got you this. I'll vote on it. But if I give you a bill and there's nothing in it that you want, you're not voting for it. He's got a 2-vote margin until Stefanik, Gaetz, and Waltz get their seats filled.
Look, if you had any doubt that this is the most transactional, results-oriented human being on the planet, I've got news for you. You just found out. And it's not just – it's such a stark contrast from even his own first term, because he wants results. The border, less than 30 days, it's completely under control, slower than it's ever been that I've ever seen in my lifetime, and I've covered the border for more than a decade. On DOGE, we've been talking about conservative, you know, fiscal responsibility since the days of Reagan in the 80s, and nothing has happened in that time that's significant. In 30 days, $55 billion, DOGE, Elon Musk has turned loose. Now you're getting – to the actual legislation, the sausage making on Capitol Hill. And the White House always plays a role because it is that incumbent's agenda. He is getting fast results. And what you're seeing with the House and the Senate with the narrowest of majorities right. in modern times, he's actually getting results. No one thought that was possible when we came into this Congress.
All right. So Griff Jenkins, more with him in a moment. Griff, you have a special coming up too, right?
Showdown at the Panama Canal.
Yeah. We'll find out more about that. The president did make that out. He said, worst deal ever. That's the worst deal
ever. He's obsessed with that.
I know. But we need it back. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He right. built the Panama Canal, by the way. He built the Panama Canal, which we have to take back because the Panama Canal is being run by China. It was one of the dumbest deals ever made in the history of our country. We lost 38,000 people. It was the most expensive development ever built at that time. But if you bring it up to this day, it was the most expensive development ever built, over $1 trillion. And think of this, Brian, the Panama Canal, we lost 38,000 people, and they gave it away for $1 for
right.
no reason. They gave it away for $1 to Panama. You know, they wanted to be politically correct. And we got to take it back because China has taken over the Panama Canal, and that wasn't the deal. They were charging our ships more than they were charging regular ships.
So President Trump talking about the Panama Canal today really bothers him. Also, it just works to our advantage to get those prices down. And I did look back at footage back that time, and it's so weird to see the national news on film. But they did say there were nonstop protests because the people of Panama wanted to own the canal. And we would even have the military there to secure it or work out a deal to sell it. And as usual, Jimmy Carter just gave it away. And then it has not been maintained. China comes in and says, we'll maintain it. And then Trump says, you got to be kidding me. Why would you bring China into our hemisphere? That is exactly what Griff Jenkins is talking about with the special on Fox Nation, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's Showdown at the Panama Canal, Brian. It is must watch, particularly for the history. You talked about the footage. We lay out the entire history, and President Trump is right about the construction of it that we gave away, but he left out there's a second set of locks that are more modern that were completed in 2016 to fit bigger ships. The biggest cargo ships
right.
go through those set of locks. Panama built those and control them. But the history, Teddy Roosevelt spent years doing it. And literally, he wasn't in office when it finally got done. They took like thousands of miles of a cable to let Woodrow Wilson hit the detonation for the last explosive. Now, did they actually do it or was it a photo op? I don't know, but we got the historic footage. Then years later, you've got FDR, game changer after Pearl Harbor's attack, because we now can move warships through that channel. And Trump's concern is that while China doesn't actually control the Panama Canal, Panama does, on either side of it, on the Pacific side and Atlantic side, there are ports that are leased and controlled by China. But the Panamanians say, if Trump has a problem, please come down and sit down with us because we would like him to focus on the international shipping dominance that China has. Because if President Trump, they say, is worried about China controlling the Panama Canal, they also should be worried about the Suez Canal, the Singapore Straits, the English Channel, because China has taken control of ports in 54 places across more than 20 countries. And that is where the U.S. has been asleep for decades. And so it's not just about the Panama Canal. And if you go to Fox Nation right now, download Showdown at Panama Canal, you can learn all of this stuff and hear from Panamanians.
But by the way, why did Jimmy Carter sell it?
Because ultimately, I think there was the pressure that Trump, was talking about the Panamanians want to control, but it was a foresight that the Carter administration thought, well, we don't really need it. We've already become this geopolitical dominant country. And so, you know, we're still going to be the biggest customer, but we need to focus our ideas elsewhere and let Panama take control. And here's a treaty that says if there's ever a problem, we can just come in and defend it. Problem is, it's not that clear.
Yeah. How about this? The other beat you have is you're going to be on outnumbered too. But the other beat you have is illegal immigration. In 2024, there were 2,872 crossings in February on average. In February 2025, it's down to 359. How do you explain this type of decrease?
It is remarkable for the guy that spent years covering the border, particularly at the height where I was standing in Eagle Pass, Texas, and you've got 4,000 coming across on my drone camera all day long from multiple countries. If I took you there today, we would have trouble finding a single migrant crossing. And it's just the crackdown, the executive order, ICE in the interior. It's all a message going south saying you can't come now. This administration ain't going to let you in.
Griffel, check out your special on Fox Nation. We will watch you on Outnumbered and perhaps see you on Fox and Friends soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Griff Jacobs, thanks so much. And don't forget, I want to see you History, Liberty, and Lefts. March 22nd, KTFK, all your listeners in St. Louis at the factory. BrianKilmeade.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. One of America's finest comedians, John Crist, works clean, by the way, which helps Eric a lot. You don't have to bleep anything. His dad was a pastor, but he is one of the hottest comedians in the country. He's got a national tour about to kick off. It's called Jokes for Humans Tour. So that works out great for us. Alexi Lalas, he's Fox Sports' premier analyst. He starts his 30th season with the Major League Soccer. I was there for the first. I did Metro Stars, I think, year three, and they became the Red Bulls. And I was there for the launch of the MLS, and then they said, we're not ready. And they came back the next year and started. That was right after the 94 World Cup. They would actually start in 96. Shannon Bream remembers when Major League Soccer launched. She talks about it all the time. In fact, I keep telling her, enough about soccer. Can't we talk about the news? And she joins us now.
I'm easily distracted, Brian, by the sports talk.
That's something you've never said in your life. Am I correct?
Listen, I live with a sports fanatic, as you know. So we watch everything from soccer to football to hockey to cornhole championships. You know, there's not any sport that we're not watching in our house.
So get this. Today, the Yankees have announced they will now allow facial hair on their players for the first time ever. George Steinbrenner is probably rolling over multiple times in his grave.
I know.
How do you feel about that? How does your husband feel about that?
Listen, during hunting season, we have a deal where he grows his facial hair for like 6 to 8 weeks, and I don't fuss about it, and he doesn't keep it past the boundary. In 30 years of marriage, we've come to this. I think that the Yankees are like the handsomest team out there because I think their dudes look clean cut and sharp and, you know, good. But some people are big fans of the facial hair. I just thought, you know, they had their own look.
I did not even know that that was an issue. None of the players really complain. Sometimes when Oscar Gamble in the 70s or 80s, whose guy used to have really wide hair, people used to complain about it. But you can wear a mustache, but now you can do whatever you want. So I think it's a bad sign.
I feel like the crazy kids now are very into the 1970s, like, creepy mustaches. And I'm like, I know you guys are sort of trying to be retro hipster, but it's not hot.
Yeah, I don't.
Not that anybody cares about my advice about what's hot or not on dudes.
No, I think people do. I mean, yeah. I remember when Chris Wallace had the job, he used to put out a what's hot list and
yeah,
who's hot.
Yeah, exactly. I do a who wore it best.
Who wore
it
best?
It used to be about clothes, but now it's about facial hair.
So the President of the United States talked to us for 40 minutes before.
I heard.
Okay. Sounds like you're a little angry.
No. I was saying I thought you got a lot of good stuff. It was a very good conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I just would be great if he would just agree to FaceTime. I mean, he won't do it.
On the phone anyway.
I know. Just put the face. I don't know.
Let me see what you got going on.
Right. So I mean, we'll roll some. Do we have even a list of those clips or just? Oh, yeah. How about this? So I asked him this about, I thought for the longest time, while the Senate was passing two bills and the first of two bills, he came out and said, I want one bill. And then I asked him about it. Here's what he said.
We get to the same point, you know, two bills. So now what they approved yesterday is one part of it, and then they'd approve another part of it. You could make the case you could do three. You could do for 10, as long as we get along, you know, as long as we get them all added up and it's the same thing. And You know, I think we're in very good shape. I think that's a good signal that – I think it's a very good signal that we got the one bill passed, because there's great unity. We have great unity in the party.
So your thoughts about that? Unless Senator Thune must be saying to himself, what? So you're okay with this? He said, I'll just kind of – and I played the cut from Senator Thune with us yesterday about, you know, I have two bills. It's a backup. It's a backup. And then after the Votorama, they passed it. Now, what exactly did they pass?
Well, they did pass this comprehensive budget resolution that has funding for things like the border and all of these priorities that President Trump wants. But what they're trying to do in the House is loop in some additional things like those 2017 tax cuts and extending them for some period of time. You've heard some senators say that they won't vote for anything that doesn't include them permanently. But the House is trying to put all of that in one package because a lot of members there think they have their best leverage to do it. Now, there are some who openly worry, okay, we passed something that's got, you know, basic funding, the border, that kind of stuff right now. But if we don't get the tax cuts into this, we won't have any leverage to get them across the finish line in a standalone bill later. So I think President Trump has all these priorities. He wants those tax cuts. He wants the border money and all the funding for the government. And the House is saying, we give you the better chance at getting all of that. But I think he wants to get all those things done. It would happen quicker in the House if they put it in one measure. So if he wants speed and he wants his whole list done, I think he's hoping that the House is where that gets done.
Yeah, so those are big things. I think something big is going to happen over the weekend. I mean, you returned when it comes to Hamas. You returned four hostages in caskets, one of which is not even the right person, and two of which are a four-year-old and a nine-month-old.
Yeah.
I asked President Trump flat out. I said, what is that? He goes, he could do whatever he wants. Remember President Biden?
Right.
Get aid in there. How dare you can put in there? Don't
right,
go to Rafah.
Holding weapons and all kinds of things.
Yeah. And this president, whatever he wants to do. He just said that. So I get the sense that Netanyahu is looking at Hamas reconfigure, reassemble. And I get the sense that's just not okay with him.
Yeah, and the fact that it's such an offensive thing that they would turn over this random body of another, you know, dead woman that's not the mother of or these children, I think it is so offensive to the Israeli people. And they do see it as a violation of the agreement. And you know that they've still got to flesh out and negotiate the second phase and the third phase. And so if they take this as a provocation from Hamas, and who knows who's responsible for the explosions yesterday in Israel as well, it sounds like there are people who would be happy with this exploding again into something much broader and much wider. And you got to think about who benefits and who doesn't from that. But you're right. This administration has said clearly, and you've heard the president multiple times use the word all hell breaking loose, hell will break loose. And they've said, listen, whatever they decide to do there in Israel, we back them. There was reporting in the Washington Post last week that that includes potentially an Israeli strike on Iranian nuclear facilities. So there's a lot that could happen.
Right. So who you have on this week?
So we've got on Congressman Jim Jordan and from the other side of the aisle, Congressman Jim Himes. We should lock in our White House guest pretty shortly. And we're going to talk about all these battles, both foreign policy and domestic, all the DOGE cuts and all the legal battles, because there are a few of those going on. As we stand by, and I'm waiting to hear from the Supreme Court on, you know, the first Trump case that's actually going to reach, that has reached SCOTUS from this term.
Well, thanks so much, Shannon Bream. We will watch. And I'm on Sunday, too, now, 10 o'clock.
I'm going to see you Sunday night. I see you trying to crowd in on my territory.
How dare you?
There's enough for us to share.
Absolutely. So, by the way, I have Kid Rock on. Do you?
I don't.
Good.
Because,
so I'm
you know, once
there.
He's locked in for you, then I can't steal him. But I might text him after this.
Charlie Kirk. You do have a you have a cell number? Damn. Charlie Kirk and Tom Cotton. Chris DiStefano. Who would be a good panelist for you? He would not take it serious. That would be your problem, but he'd be very entertaining.
Kid loving it up, lighten it up a little bit.
All right, so Shannon,
When's your dance break? Is that early show, mid show, late show?
I mean, it's every break. I'm only comfortable when I'm dancing.
Okay, well then I'm going to definitely watch like I always do, just on Sunday.
Go get him, Shannon Bream.
Okay, bye.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. Alexi Lalas is coming up next. Then John Crist will bring you through. We're also looking at a number of stories. Including Donald Trump's going to speak at CPAC tomorrow. We know that for sure. We also know that a lot of tension in the Ukraine-Russia situation. Russia's cheering, but Zelensky right now got a message from the Polish leader, listen to Trump. I think he ticked off Trump on two separate occasions, but Trump's not looking to abandon him yet. And just know, the guy doesn't hold grudges. Just ask Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State. Just ask Ron DeSantis. They golfed together 2 weeks ago. Don't move.
Taking America back.
Canada's been very abusive of the United States for many years.
One ally at a time.
It is an act of economic warfare.
The trade imbalance and our trade deficit has gone up 200+%.
With Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. There's a lot going on today. People are focused on spring training. I got at the end of football. I understand it. The UFL starting. We know that. Fox owns a great portion of that. ESPN owns a portion, too. And John Crist is coming up in about 15 minutes. But right now, it's the 30th season beginning of Major League Soccer. If you talk about sponsors, you talk about momentum, you talk about crowds, there's no league that's hotter right now. And by the way, it launched with great fanfare, went on hold for a year because they weren't ready, came back the following year, and then after 3 or 4 years, they were struggling to stay above water. Some football guy saved them, named Robert Kraft, Phil Anschutz over in Los Angeles, and then another group that owns the Kansas City Chiefs came by and helped save the day. Alexi Lalas was a player in the beginning, went over to Italy for a brief period of time, was a star, and captained the U.S. national team. Right after the 94 World Cup, this was make it or break it time. And here we are 30 years later, and they have definitely established themselves in the soccer, in the sports landscape. Alexi Lalas, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, my friend, I think it was Lamar Hunt, the Hunts over yes. there that you were looking for when it comes to Major League Soccer. Yes, it's been a long and winding road, as the saying goes. You've come a long way, baby, and certainly MLS has on and off the field. I think back to 1996 when we started this, and if you had told me that going into 2025, you'd be going into your 30th year, adding your 30th team down there in San Diego as an expansion team, all of the soccer-specific stadiums, all the things I've talked to you over the years about that have happened on and off the field, it warms the cockles of my redheaded American soccer heart to see how far we have come on and off the field as a soccer-playing nation and how far this particular league, Major League Soccer, has come. Ultimately, this is the most successful professional soccer league in North American history, and it's not without some ups and downs along the way, but we're real excited about the 30th season and obviously what's coming in 2026 with the Men's World Cup returning to the U.S., which, by the way, you can see on Fox.
So in 94, how valuable was the World Cup for laying the foundation for you guys in the MLS?
It was huge. Initially, it was going to be scheduled to happen, like you said, immediately following the 94 World Cup. And what they did was say, listen, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. Let's wait a couple years. So in 1996, it actually kicked off. And there were some lean times. I mean, there were some times, like you mentioned, where there was a potential of it following the course of a lot of soccer leagues and teams out there and folding and going away, because our past is littered with that. And even in the early aughts, it almost went away, if not for, you know, the belief and I guess the vision of a lot of the people that we mentioned and some very, very deep pockets. And now they find themselves with assets that have appreciated in terms of the value, but also the credibility and the interest of the sport is at an all-time high. So the landscape back in 1994 that was used as the platform for the 1996 launch of MLS, that doesn't exist anymore. It is a very, very different soccer landscape in 2025 and certainly in 2026 when the world comes back for the Men's World Cup.
So what about your decision? Right after the 94 World Cup, you were one of the stars to emerge, and you went over to Italy for a year. Were you a part of the first team?
One of the proudest moments of my life from a professional perspective was getting on the plane and coming back to the United States to start this league. And it is the proverbial league of our own. This is something that we had talked about in the back of buses and hotels. And it was kind of this beautiful dream and vision. And then it came to fruition, needed everybody on and off the field to help. And so I looked at it as, not to get too in deep with it, but it was a kind of a responsibility, but one that I honored, one that I loved taking to come back. And I was playing over in Italy, had a wonderful time over there, but this was, like I said, this was our league, and I wanted to be a part from the start. And when that whistle blew the first game in 1996, again, we didn't know where it was going, but there was a sense of pride and responsibility for all of the players that came back, and then certainly all of the players that have come since then, you know, many that weren't even born back then that have had now multiple opportunities and pathways that didn't exist back in the 1900s when I was running around.
Lexi Lalas, our guest. So, Lexi, I was at the very first game, San Jose Earthquakes, when Alda scored. I might have been at the end of the game or in overtime to give him a 1-0 win. The field was way too narrow. It should have been played by like 12 and unders. Nice little stadium. But he scored at the end, and I was at the final in the pouring rain in New England as Bruce Arena's team won the championship for the first time, that DC United won the first ever championship, and then watched it grow since then. So there was one soccer-specific stadium first. It was Columbus. How many are there now? Every one of them?
Oh, look, I mean, yeah, we're getting to a point where almost every single team has one. And then certainly teams that play at big stadiums, you know, for example, Atlanta plays in the big football stadium. But, you know, they get really big numbers. But it fundamentally changed the business when these teams started building their own place. Because you can have the greatest product in the world, but the box does matter. And sometimes playing in big stadiums, even with a good crowd like 20,000, it's cavernous and it just doesn't show your product in the best possible way. And from a pure business perspective, obviously the revenue that comes in when you make these things. But more importantly, you know, these are meeting places. These are cathedrals, if you will. And they're specific to soccer. And so they're made for the soccer fan. They're made for the soccer experience. And they're made for the soccer players. And they have made all the difference from a business perspective. And I think also from a perception perspective of what the sport is and where it's going.
So you say that they say five clubs are now $1 billion valuation. If I wanted to buy a team or get into the league, is it going to cost me what, $30 million? More than that?
No. What, $30 million? Are you crazy?
$100 million?
You can't even get the locker room for $30 million. So yeah, right now, I mean, you're talking about $500 million just for the expansion fee. But then you also have to build a stadium. You also have to have facilities. You have to pay everybody. So you're definitely into the billions of dollars when it comes to what's going on. The one thing that I regret is that in 1996, when I came back, you know, I had some leverage back then. I should have put what we call now a Beckham clause. And for people that remember, David Beckham came to Major League Soccer. And the clause that he had written in by his people, and it was one of the smartest things ever, was the ability to buy an expansion team at a fixed rate. I wish I had that. It would have made me very, very wealthy. But I didn't. And there are people that, even back in the early aughts, you could have gotten an MLS team for, you know, the $10 to $15 million range. And now, like I said, just to buy the expansion rights, you have to pay, you know, close to $500 million.
All right, so here we go. This is going to be the first game. It kicks off Saturday, LAFC against Minnesota. That game will be on Fox, right?
Yep. So we'll have games every week. Obviously, Apple, you know, has a partnership with MLS, a really interesting, and, you know, we'll see if they're seeing around the corner when it comes to streaming and what's going on there. But from a Fox linear perspective, you can go into the bar, you can watch it at home. It's there. LAFC champions a couple of years ago, a really, really good team. You know, in Minnesota, getting out of the cold there, coming here to Los Angeles where I live, giving themselves a sun, and who knows, maybe even a win against LAFC. But we'll be doing it year after year after year. Like I said, San Diego, a new team coming in, lots of new signings, and a lot of real positivity heading forward on and off the field for what MLS is going into its 30th season.
Messi still sells out wherever he goes.
You know it, man. You know it. I mean, it's amazing. He the other day he was up in Kansas City playing a cup game, and he scored just an incredible goal. By the way, it was 3 degrees. He was freezing his you-know-what off, but nothing stops that guy when it comes to getting on the soccer field and doing magical things. And so hopefully he'll continue to do it from an MLS perspective, and then the possibility of him defending his World Cup in his new neighborhood, his new backyard in the summer of 2026 with Argentina. Oh, love it.
Hi, Lexi. Alexi Lalas, America's premier color commentator, was once one of our premier players and still has game. Alexi Lalas, thanks so much. We'll check you out Saturday, LAFC against Minnesota on Fox. Go get him, Lexi.
Yep. Thanks, my friend. Me and Trump on Kill Me. You know it. You love it, baby.
Same day.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're all divided, but we got to stay united, okay? We got this era of Christianity, we got to stay united, because when we get up to heaven, I feel like they're not going to like us, you know? people in heaven are not going to like people from 2024, you know? They're going to be like, we give up our firstborn child for the faith. And we're like, we give up chocolate on Wednesdays, you know? They're like, how did you become a Christian? Like, a missionary came to my village in the 1500s. What about you? I was watching the Super Bowl and I saw He Gets Us commercial.
John Crist using religion to his own advantage.
That's the intro line. I'll take it. Now keep going.
Yeah, because you almost interrupted your plug. He's got a brand new tour. He has named it Jokes for the Human Tour, which encompasses all of us. And where are you going to be next? What's in the next stuff?
Oh, I don't want to brag up top here, but I'm sold out in Branson, Missouri.
Branson, Missouri. That's middle America. Yeah. That's the people that listen to us right now.
Yeah. Do we got a show over there?
Are we in Branson?
No, I thought you knew them all.
We're in St. Louis. Yeah. I know that, but. Well, Branson's not near St. Louis, is it?
Nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we should.
A man of the people, Brian Kilmeade. That's 13 hours apart. Branson to St. Louis?
Oh, yeah. It's 13 hours.
I don't know, actually. All right. We're not doing good at geography.
All right, not yet. So John, last time I talked to you, the summer was coming up. You go, I'm taking a month off, right?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Great.
Yeah. And did you write the whole time?
Well, you know what? The only time I'm stressed is when I come up here.
Why?
Everybody in Branson, everybody in middle America, the listening is doing great. It's stressful here in this city.
Because nobody's happy.
Yeah, I, you
the
know,
mayor's so, under indictment. Nah, the governor's going to get rid of the mayor.
Go walk around, especially right. with how cold it is.
Right.
Nobody's happy.
Right. That's true. But it is February.
Yeah.
If anybody should understand the weather, it is New Yorkers.
They should know.
I do check myself once in a while. Go, this is winter, four seasons.
Yeah.
You have to deal with that.
Yeah, my agent or my publicist like, when do you want to go up and see Brian in New York City? I go, February.
Fantastic.
Up there in February.
Told the brochures.
Yeah, February. She said she wanted to go see the Statue of Liberty. I go, no, we're not doing
that. Well, not today, because you got to take a boat to it.
No, we're not doing that. It's outside.
Ever? Yeah.
No, yeah, I've already been. Yeah.
Right. Who's she?
That's my girlfriend. She's off camera.
Right.
But based on, you know, she's not allowed to be on screen yet, but, you know, she can be off camera girlfriend.
You have not, she has not signed a release.
Everybody listening to this is like, there's definitely no woman over there.
When can she sign? When can she go?
When can she be on air?
Yeah.
Well, I'm her publicist, actually, so you have to talk to me about having her as a guest.
I'm talking to you now. What's going on?
Yeah, she.
But you know, I also think it's interesting that she thinks you're funny, right?
My girlfriend thinks I'm funny.
I mean, can you imagine dating somebody that doesn't think you're funny when you?
That'd be tough. Well, keep in mind we are dating, so I'm assuming
every day's an audition.
Every guy that's been married for 10 years, he's like, no, she doesn't think I'm funny. I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, because
once the stories run out, yeah, then any woman married for 10 years go, I already heard this story. The husband goes, can I tell a joke? Here we go with this again.
Right.
Yeah,
that is so true.
Here we go with
but
this
John,
again.
You're under pressure to come up with new material.
A lot of pressure.
So this is you're the perfect boyfriend.
Because it's always fresh.
Right. Everything's fresh.
You know what? I tell her that. Perfect boyfriend.
Right.
Let's go.
But unlike, so when you do a special, you got to get rid of all that material.
Got to be all, yeah.
Right?
One came out on Monday, so that's all gone.
Right. Oh, you had a special on Monday. Okay.
Yeah.
It is... I apologize.
Mean, where is this in the press? That's why I came here.
Here we go.
No, I'm just joking.
Branson, Missouri, you're on the 7th. That's in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah,
and then on the 8th in Kansas City. So you're going to travel right after the show?
Yeah, we're going right
at the Midland Theater.
Yep.
And then you're going to be at the Factory in St. Louis.
There you go.
I cannot believe this. On the 9th.
Yeah.
You know who's coming up on the 22nd there?
You.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice theater, too.
Yeah.
Beautiful theater.
But it's big.
Yeah, it's big.
I don't know if it's – I don't think I'm – Brian, the Factory is really my – speed. I'm going to have a hard time filling that up.
You
have to wait 20 minutes to fill that up, right?
Yes. I think that once we added a second show, I believe there.
Did you really?
Yeah, I believe there. Yeah.
That is taunting.
No.
That should not be allowed.
It's right by the Topgolf there. Yeah, the Factory. Beautiful
venue.
Probably not in March, though, but it's nice.
What do you think? How do you handle the election? Now that it was finally over, we know who the president is. There's no controversy. How does that factor into your...
Well, I said I in the neighborhood... I go, this is the first time this has ever been said. I miss the election days.
Really?
The neighborhood, at least, you know, with the signs, that was the best.
Because you knew?
Yeah, you're holding the signs up. Like, I would tell my like, we came home for Christmas.
Right.
And my parents, there's 16 people in the family, so we have to stay at neighbor's houses. And we stayed at my neighbor's house, and I came back, and I go, Mom, You know, in their backyard, they have a cats for Joe Biden sign. And my mom goes, never again, dude. Or never stay in there again.
Can I ask them? I mean, do they have hotels? I mean, why would you stay with a neighbor?
It's Lilburn, Georgia. There's no hotels out there. Now I'm being roasted.
Is that true?
Yeah, there's no, I mean, the closest hotel is like 20 minutes away.
So when I played soccer, we never stayed in hotels. Yeah. They would make the families of the teams we're playing house us.
The opponent?
Think about how unhealthy that's. Yeah, the opponent.
What year is this? 1800s?
No, in the 1800s when they did travel soccer. Yeah, of course, the Cowboys. Once you're done with the cattle, you got to go have a scrimmage later.
Wait, so you play against the team and then go home with the parents?
Yeah. It was crazy. Think about that. We didn't know nothing about the parents.
Have you ever said this on?
No. This is the craziest thing.
This is a stand-up bit.
I did not know that. Now I'm realizing.
And I bet people listening who go, oh, my gosh, we did that.
Yeah. I mean, put it this way. I remember going to Virginia and going, sorry, we don't have the money. That was three states away.
Yeah, yeah.
And we drive. I mean,
yeah.
Basically, we'd have to rotate tires halfway.
But you were somebody else's. Somebody else's kid.
Yeah. So you
mom.
Would go.
Yeah.
You would go and you'd say, okay, sometimes you get to go with your teammate. Other times you go by yourself. And you just go with the Johnsons.
And you didn't even what could go wrong?
Right.
Yeah. And now these days, the parents are, who are the Johnsons? Who is his mother? Who is his father? They need to meet. They need to have lunch together.
Yeah. They have to spend a year together.
Yeah.
Before we.
I heard that they're not doing, kids aren't doing sleepovers anymore.
Yeah. I heard that too.
Yeah. You'd heard that?
Yeah. Well, why would you? You could get sued.
We shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
Yeah. I go over to so-and-so's for a sleepover?
Why, are we out of beds? I mean, so this is John. So I want to ask you, how do you feel about these prayer apps? Because it really caught me by surprise.
Oh, yeah. The prayer apps.
What's the matter?
No. Oh, yeah. I thought she was setting me up for this.
Oh, no.
You just pointed
to Allison through the glass.
Yeah. Well, Mark Wahlberg has one.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one.
Hollow?
I go... The voice from Ted, we're praying to him. The guy from, are we sure? That's the guy. He's like, guys, listen up. And Mark Wahlberg's done, Entourage and all these movies. And he's like, guys, prayer is the most important. I go, hold on. We missed missed the switch.
I know. Absolutely.
I think he's Catholic.
You're going to be impressed with this. St. Augustine.
Yeah.
He was a crazy man. Had a revelation. Had a great time.
Yeah.
Change his ways.
Yeah.
Why can't Wahlberg?
He should be allowed to.
He should be allowed to.
Yeah. If they let us in, they should let him in.
All right. So I was
struck by the ad. You know, it's Mark Wahlberg saying something, and then he's like, prayer app. I was like, wait, what? we need like a, like NBA players have like a chart of like the power rankings. We need to know who's religious, because sometimes you switch in teams and we didn't know.
So a couple of things are going on. Number one, should you be charging for a prayer app? Right? I mean, this is...
Oh, you've had to pay for it.
You do have to. Yeah. I don't think it's free.
Yeah.
Well, you got to listen to the commercials. You have a choice.
I'm pretty sure... I've read the book. I'm pretty sure you can talk to him directly.
You mean the Bible?
Yeah.
I just got that. Here's John Chris talking about what you can and can't pray for.
In heaven, there's no jobs, okay? And I think I think to break the ice, and this is just me, this is how my brain works, I think you would ask, how did you die? Wouldn't that be the first question you would want to know from everybody? How'd you die? I was in a hot air balloon accident. What? How did you die? Oh, I was getting baptized. I got eaten by a crocodile. That's the wildest story I ever heard. You want to go up to heaven with something fun on your resume.
So that's
true. Yeah, you got to. Well, the joke, the end of that joke is you can't lie in heaven. I'm guessing there's no, because there's no sin. And some people
they're taping everything.
Some people's like, I was a martyr for the faith. I was one of the legends. And then some guy goes, nah, I died of COVID. They're like, they're probably going to make fun of you. In heaven? Yeah, they're going to be like, they're going to talk behind your back for sure.
Right.
You want to, because you got to say, I'm guessing they say, what was on your death certificate? How'd you die? And you want to go up there with something cool.
Right.
At least. Wouldn't that be the first question you'd want to ask?
That is a great question. And
How'd you die?
It is something similar.
Because there's no sadness up there also, so you can talk about it in a fun way.
And how do you know that?
Yeah. I don't know. That's in the book, dude.
All right. Love that. By the way, you have a special coming up February 18th.
Yeah.
Which is soon.
February 18th is past.
True.
Yeah.
it's called Emotional Support. So it happened. But it's still good to watch, right?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it just came out.
Where do we get it?
It's on YouTube. All right. The biggest platform, the biggest social media platform. And that's what everybody can get from.
So a couple of things. Does that mean you're a total entrepreneur? That means it's your channel, or did someone in YouTube hire you to do this special?
It's I financed it, and then we had a couple offers from a couple different platforms. But it's just with my crowd is so big, my follower is so much over there, it's hard to compete with it. Because you're going to sell it to some other platform and they're going to put it on theirs, but mine is bigger.
Right.
So why would I go over there?
So you're totally on your own. You don't need anybody.
Well, I'm here.
I thought this was a friendship thing.
Yeah.
It's not. I didn't know I was being used. I wish I knew. Here's John talking about 21st century Christians getting to heaven.
We're all divided, but we got to stay united, okay? This era of Christianity, we got to stay united, because when we get up to heaven, I feel like they're not going to like us, you know? The people in heaven are not going to like people from 2024, you know? They're going to be like, we give up our firstborn child for the faith. And we're like, we give up chocolate on Wednesdays, you know? They're like, how'd you become a Christian? Like, a missionary came to my village in the 1500s. What about you? I was watching the Super Bowl and I saw He Gets Us commercial.
All right. That is awesome. Hey, we're going to take a time out to talk more with John Crist. And February 18th, go to YouTube. This came out. This special came out on YouTube. So go out and check it out. It's called Emotional Support Comedy Special. The good news is it's popular. The bad news is you got to get rid of all that material.
Got to get rid of all of it. Yeah, but it's fresh. Coming in 2 weeks, it'll be fresh.
Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I guess things changed for me on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night? What happened Tuesday night?
I saw your act.
My act? Well, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, to be honest, it just didn't make it for me. It's just so much fluff.
I can't believe it. So what are you saying? You didn't like my act? So that's it?
I can't be with someone if I don't respect what they do.
You're a cashier.
Jerry, it wasn't my kind of humor.
You can't go by the audience that night. It was late. They were terrible.
I heard the material.
I have other stuff. You should come see me on the weekend.
I did not see that episode. That is so funny.
That's perfect.
Right? that's just it. It's like, hey, you're a good looking guy. I just don't think you're funny.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened? That really has not happened to you.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, they go, I don't get it.
Right.
What do you mean you don't get it?
Like, people say, I'm sexy. Like, yeah. John, you're sexy,
yeah,
but you're not funny.
A lot of times. That's what everybody says. The first thing they say, very sexy.
Right. Yeah. And then the second thing is?
They mostly just say, I didn't get it. I got on your social media. What is this? I go, it's a long story.
You know what's so interesting is, I know people that will watch Seinfeld. Do you think Seinfeld's funny?
Yeah, I do.
So I watch people go, I don't get it.
Yeah,
and like, they're smart people.
Yeah,
I'm like, what don't you get? I'm like,
well, comedy's very. You ever sent like a funny? We share stuff back and forth with each other.
Yeah.
You ever shared something with somebody? They go, I didn't think it was funny. You're like, we're not friends anymore. We're done.
Right. That's like one of the worst things you could say to you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think this is funny.
So
what?
Do you know what happened today?
What?
The Yankees came out and changed their facial hair rules. You now can have a beard, long hair with the Yankees.
And they never before? Never?
Never before. Today, you're talking about 100 years when they were the Highlanders. No facial hair. They allowed to have mustaches. That's it.
Yeah. It's like the military and the Yankees.
Do you think that's a bad sign for the country?
I mean, but they're going to turn into the Red Sox.
Right.
Yeah, that's
like
not a
barbarians.
Good thing. Yeah, these are our leaders.
Right.
If you go, what is America? You go, baseball.
And?
The Yankees.
Thank you.
And the Statue of Liberty. And now these guys are going to look like
now it's
cavemen.
Just, now it's baseball and the Statue of Liberty. No Yankees in between. Here is the moment. This actually happened, right? This is the moment that George Steinbrenner was asked by Lou Piniella if he could grow a beard. And this is what Lou Piniella said George Steinbrenner said to him.
I didn't know Mr. Steinbrenner at all. I'd just been traded there. And joking around, I said, our Lord Jesus Christ had long hair. And things seemed to work out for him. And didn't say a word. He says, jump with me. And I walked across the street to the Fort Lauderdale swimming pool. And he says, you can walk across that water. You can wear your hair any way you want.
Yeah, that's pretty funny, right?
That's a great joke.
Right.
Stellar.
But it's bad for America that this is not happening.
I wonder why. Did they say?
No.
They just said beards now?
No, it's not like Aaron Judge. If Aaron Judge says, listen, I'm growing a beard, they're like, we're changing policies.
Yeah, we're changing our policies immediately. Everything.
Don't want to go to the Bronx anymore. Yeah. We'll move to Manhattan.
Yeah, well, we gave you $1 billion, so I'll tell you what, you can probably grow your facial hair.
Right, and listen, we're on WABC, so I don't want to put anyone in New York, but Aaron Judge is perfect except for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. Now you're going to get some heat for that. Yeah. Right. All the Trump stuff is fine. But you said Aaron Judge is not good in the playoffs. Whoops.
I probably can't walk the streets.
Well, they probably like it. If that's going to help him hit in the playoffs, fine.
Right. I mean, I don't know if he can grow facial hair.
That guy is a monster. Have you ever seen him?
Yeah. 6'6".
Gosh.
I mean, for a baseball player.
Playing baseball and just jacked.
Right. And fast.
Yeah.
And can play center field.
They got it. Well, there's no salary cap, right, in baseball, so you can have, you can have everybody.
Do you do the same thing, the luxury tax? Like, John, you can outspend your stipend.
Pay. Yeah.
But at one point, the interest rates on the loans you're taking out to live this lifestyle of yours is going to come back to haunt you.
Yeah. And then you get the Mets, and they spend all the money in the world, and they're still not good.
I love that the Mets did this, and they go, listen, I know I'm going to be the richest guy in baseball, but don't worry about it. I will not spend a lot. I will not blow the salary cap out of place. He goes, yeah, I lied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought everybody.
I bought everybody.
Yeah. You bought Jeter? Yeah, he's back. Wow. I didn't think you could do that. Yeah.
I'm doing it.
Anyway. Well, everybody wanted the Subway Series.
We
for
did.
The World Series.
Did you guys outside New York, do you think anybody wanted it?
Probably not. Yeah. We like, here's what people pay attention to New York for, because it around the country, people watch New York for like the Knicks.
Right. Now
everybody knows the Knicks.
Right.
And Jalen Brunson.
Right.
And I don't know, the pickpocketers on Times Square.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
what they know about. Yeah.
Those were the good old days, pickpocketers. Yeah. Oh, now it's assaults. Yeah. Just general assaults.
inflation. Yeah.
I want everything. I want everything you wear. I just don't want it in your pocket.
Well, I mean,
everything.
If the Yankees can grow beards, then Elsa on Times Square is going to take your wallet.
Fantastic.
I think that's
where
we're going.
And by the way, Elsa is big and strong enough, she will take even John Chris' wallet. I never even introduced you.
I got robbed by Elsa.
Absolutely. Listen, John's got a special on YouTube, and he's going to be at the factory right before me.
Yeah.
So clean the place up.
We're pretty much touring together.
Right. Very similar.
Yeah.
And very similar material. That's the problem.
Do you still have any of my jokes in your show?
I don't know.
I gave you a bunch of jokes.
No, but you told me to do it with the city.
Oh, yeah.
You wrote it for the city. You didn't write it to... I can't carry this with me. It doesn't really.
It doesn't travel well. Fair. I mean,
you don't even remember what you give me? February 18th, check him out on YouTube and check out his tour. Where do we find you on your tour?
YouTube.
At John Crist.
JohnChristComedy.com.
All right. And you sold that everywhere. So this is a... You didn't even have to come in.
Yeah, I'm doing
you?
This for you.
You're doing it for me?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I was doing it for you.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Follow and listen starting February 25th at foxtruecrime.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.